I hate to interrupt the animated conversation, but I also want to make sure that I don't hold you on until very late in the evening. I'm going to keep my opening remarks fairly short, and I'm going to break them down into three parts. The first one is I'm going to talk about the times we live in and the threats we face from outside our country. Then I'm going to segue into the kind of work that primarily Ricky and MDAA does in trying to help us combat some of those threats. And last but not least, I'm going to move into why we are here today and the kinds of people that we're going to be honoring. Unfortunately, you will not disagree with me when I tell you that we live in volatile, unpredictable, dangerous times. And in trying to reflect on the danger and the volatility that faces our country, I did it from a stream of consciousness, because that I felt was far better than doing a whole amount of detailed research. And I came down with 7 key elements, some in order, some not in order, and again, unfortunately, I don't think you will disagree with that. The first one that we face without any argument is the terrorist threat that we have globally. It's a very dangerous, unpredictable, and difficult threat. The second one, Russia, is proving to be a clear adversary. When you look at the annexation of Crimea, the Russian actions in the Ukraine, massing of troops outside the Baltics, their actions in Syria, and their cyber warfare, there is, I don't think, too much doubt that they are working to undermine us as Americans globally. The third one is Iran. Iran has been our nemesis for many years, will probably continue to be our nemesis. And Iran and Russia are right now strange bedfellows in Syria. North Korea, number four, is as unpredictable and as dangerous as ever. Number five, as all of the folks know, particularly those in uniform, is the ongoing unrest, insurgencies in Iraq and Afghanistan. Number six, China has been belligerent to us economically and militarily. Certainly, their land grab in the South China Sea is just one manifestation of their belligerence. And then lastly, I was just thinking about long-time U.S. allies that are perhaps starting to drift away. Turkey, which has been a member of NATO for many, many decades, is clearly right now being actively courted by Russia. The Philippines, where we had major presence for decades, and is now being actively courted by China. And they, in fact, asked us to move away from some of our long-term bases at Clark and Subic Bay. And Saudi Arabia, which has been a long-term ally, certainly been expressed disenchantment by our actions or inactions in Syria and certainly in Egypt. So when you think of all of these items, and I have very little doubt that if we were to sit down with some of the more knowledgeable folks in the room, we would come up with a much longer list, a much more detailed, a much more exhaustive list. But the fact remains that we do face volatile, dangerous times. Having said that, we are who we are. We faced greater dangers in the past. That has never stopped us as a nation, and it never will. The Missile Defense Advocacy Alliance was founded by Ricky Ellison in 2002. It has been developed as, and it has evolved as, a very unique organization. It is totally independent. It is nonpartisan. It is only dedicated to advocating for the need for current and future missile defense systems in the United States. That's where the mission started. Ricky has now expanded the mission to doing the same with our allies. And we've been active with our NATO allies. We've been active with our allies like Israel and a few other countries in the Middle East who think like we do. We've been active with our allies in Japan. We've been active with our allies in South Korea. So as a consequence, the Missile Defense Advocacy Alliance has become a highly respected and is in fact arguably a global influencer. It works with the Missile Defense Agency. It works with, as you can see from this room, all branches of the services. It works with Congress, members of the House, members of the Senate. And it works with the National Security Council in the administration. The Missile Defense Advocacy Alliance has effectively and seamlessly worked with both Republican and Democratic administrations. And even as I speak, the Alliance is very actively involved in working in the current transition as we move from a Democratic administration into a Republican administration, when in fact our new president will be inaugurated next Friday. So as you think about these things, as you think about the political transition in our country, and as you think about the global threats that face us, I do believe passionately that the one really good thing among many others that Ricky has instituted is enabling the services to do things that they cannot do by themselves. Enabling the services to recognize the key folks who really make a contribution to us in missile defense and afford them public recognition. As we go now to the main part of the program, to honor these individuals, I will introduce the presenter. who will be a flag officer from each of the services. And that officer will then introduce the individual that that service has selected for this particular honor. So the first officer I have the pleasure and privilege of introducing is Major General Scott Vanderham. I had the privilege of sitting next to him at dinner, and he shared with me that his call sign is Vandy. I shared with him that my son's call sign was Gonzo. Major General Scott Vanderham is the Assistant Deputy Chief of Staff Operations based in the Pentagon. He is responsible to the Secretary of the Air Force and the Chief of Staff for formulating policy, supporting air, space, irregular warfare, counterproliferation, homeland security, weather, and cyber operations. General, the only thing we have left outside your portfolio is entertainment. General Vanderham determines operational requirements, capabilities, and training necessary to support national security objectives and military strategy. He's a command pilot with 4,600 hours in the cockpit with the T-37, the T-38, the T-43, and amazingly, the B-52, the B-1, and the B-2. He has flown and employed both the B-2 and the B-1 in combat for Operation Iraqi Freedom, Operation Enduring Freedom in Afghanistan, and Operation Odyssey Dawn in Libya. Ladies and gentlemen, let's give General Vanderham a warm welcome.
Thanks, Hatim, for the kind introduction. And most of you that know anything about airplanes in this room, you would call that me a target. So it's a privilege to be here. Ricky, we sure appreciate all that you've done, and for the soldiers, sailor, airmen, and Marines, both in the past and tonight, that we're recognizing what you do in the future. It certainly means a lot, because what they do and what we're going to recognize them for tonight is what we have going on right now out in the field. And as I listened to Hatim, I thought maybe I was listening to the opening statement of a future Secretary of Defense, like when I listened to General Mattis just this week. You could have cut off that part when he transitioned to MDAA and said, wow. So if you may have a future in public service if you can and go more partisan and not bipartisan. But anyway, Ricky, thanks for all you've done to enable us do what we do. Because right now as we sit here, we're under threat of missiles from both an existential threat and from theater type powers that have a nuclear capability. Right now, Kim Jong-un is sitting on potentially lighting off missiles, intercontinental ballistic missile types. Not the short range, not the Taepodong, not the Musudong, but something that can reach us here in the United States. So we have Aegis cruisers on a tether right now. We have Tippy 2 radars focused on that region of the world. So we have sailors. We have Army personnel, soldiers, manning both a THAAD in Guam for the defense of the second island chain, and we have them manning the ground base interceptors up at Fort Greely. We have the Missile Defense Agency working hard to provide us both capabilities in the field and capabilities for the future. And as we look at not just the active defense, you know, something kinetic, hitting something kinetic, we have a lot of people working on some other passive defense things going on. And so the men and women we're going to recognize are a big part of all those pillars, both the active, the passive, and some in the command and control and knitting all of that together. So thank you all for what you do, empowered by the innovation of just really great operators, but they're energized by what industry has given them to work with. So I think it's exciting time to be able to recognize y'all tonight. And I get the privilege to recognize a very special airman, Lieutenant Colonel Tony Chavez Owens. And he started out as an air battle manager. And so he flew airplanes, did command and control of airborne assets. So he's looked at the space layer, the aerial layer, and then the terrestrial layer of what makes up our missile and cruise missile and ballistic missile defense. He was a part of that aerial layer piece, telling pilots what to do and where to go. Then he graduated to the terrestrial ground layer and then started seeing the real important things about that ground-based defense activity. And the reason he is here being recognized by us tonight is because of his incredible work in the NATO alliance. So he's from Florida, the Panhandle. Dad was a military guy, flew Talons, MC-130s out of Hurlburt Field. And he was wise enough out of South Alabama going to college. He met a gal, he's from Florida, but met a gal from Alabama, Southern Belle, and he had to convert because they're from the Tuscaloosa area. So he had to, he had to learn to speak Bama and all of that. But he converted, married a beautiful lady, and they have two kids, an 18-year-old, a 14-year-old, and his son is in Southern Alabama now, and his daughter's with him in Europe. But his assignments took him from the Panhandle to Europe, Aviano, Spangdahlem. He had an operational support squadron command, so he's post 05 command, for those of you that value command experience. And right now, he's at the United States Air Force's Europe and Africa, working on the European phased adaptive approach. And he is helping NATO knit together a real important capability, important to the NATO allies and important to us, as we look at threats that emanate from, in this case, the Middle East, that could threaten both our allies in Europe and then and eventually us, across the Atlantic for that particular threat set. So he spent time in Turkey working with U.S. and the Turkish allies as we're looking at very interesting cross-border activity and the threats emanating from Iraq and Syria. He watched firsthand some of that malign influence coming from Russia as they've kind of gone in everywhere. We give them an inch. They have pushed into that space like they're doing right now. So it was a real sensitive time while he was working that. And then he just got done being the director of a big exercise that it's called a cross, basically a big AOR, Area of Responsibility exercise, air and missile exercise, that knit together 19 different countries, 1,900 people, 5 different combatant commands, and pieces of their missile defense in Italy, in France, in Spain, and our capabilities, bringing in the Romanians, focused on this, really the first operational exercise of the European phased adaptive approach. And he didn't do it because he was assigned to do it. Somebody that was supposed to do it ended up, something happened to them, and he just jumped into the breach. And something that we really appreciate about our soldiers, say it on Airman Marines Day, is they are really good at just jumping on the grenade when it came his way. And he gladly did it. He commanded, led that exercise, and the result was a solid understanding of where they need to go next, as we not only look at ballistic missiles coming in to Europe, but in the future adding the aerial layer and then beginning to look at the other threats, the hypersonic glide vehicles, the depressed angle, the cruise missiles that when we look at both the European theater and we look at the Pacific theater. So it's my privilege and honor to have looked at the packages and got to see how he just stood out amongst everybody from what he did to for missile defense, both in his career and in the in his job there in USAFE. So it's a great honor to introduce him tonight. And so Ricky and Hatim, thank you for allowing us to do that. And I think you're going to come up here and they're going to spend some time getting some things. So thanks. For those that have yet to speak, you get to practice off me tonight, so we'll get you, get this right. First of all, congratulations on this great honor.
Appreciate it.
Ricky, you want to jump out?
I think you'll put the air power.
Okay,
air power. Okay. It's
Thank you. Have the mic.
Oh, okay. So I spoke with some of our fellow awardees this afternoon, and we agreed that we would keep our speech short, because I know everybody's time is precious. So, but again, thank you very much for being here. There is certainly a lot of brass and leadership in this room, and it's humbling to be a part of it. Sir, it's good to see you again. Colonel Vanderham, thank you for the kind introduction and taking the time to attend this ceremony. I appreciate you taking that extra step just to find out a little bit about my family and my way ahead in the future. And again, it's an honor for you to be here with me. I appreciate it. Mr. Ellerson, it has been a true pleasure to meet you. Your passion for missile defense is inspiring, and your achievements as a professional athlete and philanthropist marks true leadership. So thank you for having us here. Your team has done an amazing job. They're a class act. Everything from coordinating. All of the award recipients came from overseas. We got folks from Hawaii and from Alaska, and then there's two of us from Ramstein Rhino Ornitz Barracks area. So it's not an easy task, and it's not an easy endeavor for that team to put them together, and I think they all deserve a raise, so I'm going to hold that to you. Thanks. Told you I'd get that in for you. So on a serious note, I didn't know what BND meant 3 years ago. The general mentioned, I'm a command and control specialist with an AWACS and ground radar background. We battle manage that airspace. We deconflict restricted operating zones all to support the warfighters on the ground as well as in the air. As a missile defense planner, I've witnessed the professionalism and dedication of these missile defenders and their brethren being honored this evening. The countless hours, days, and campaigns in order to be in the right place at the right time, and heaven forbid, make that perfect shot to destroy the inbound threat, ultimately defending critical assets, resources, and most of all, people. As my mentor and my biggest cheerleader, Colonel retired Alan Burke, always said, missile defense isn't just about playing catch. There's a lot of pillars, and I had to throw a four pillars statement in for him. There's the four for the four pi, for the active defense, for passive defense, command and control, and of course, not often thought about is attack operations. That coordination that is necessary and required for to do cross area targeting is not really that easy, and it's just now quite in the infancy stage, and we're continuing to work and build to that. Our missile defense systems must evolve to defend against our enemies' current and future missile threats. I thank MDA for being at the forefront of this endeavor. I'm truly honored to be a part of this this mission. And again, I thank you and appreciate your time. So I want to make sure, sir, that you're not going to do it, throw the BB like you did to the our international partners that play soccer.
That was the French guy. Yeah.
Thank you for that. Ricky gets to do the fun stuff. I need to get you back to the more serious parts of the evening. We now move from the Air Force to the National Guard. And it's my honor to introduce Lieutenant General Daniel Hawkinson, who serves as the 11th Vice Chief of the National Guard Bureau. As Vice Chief, he assists the Chief of the National Guard Bureau in ensuring our nation's 453,000 Army and Air National Guardsmen are ready to fight with America's wars, protect the homeland, and build an enduring partnership as an integral part of the joint force and the primary combat reserve of the Army and Air Force. General Hawkinson graduated from West Point and served on active duty in air cavalry, attack helicopters, and aircraft test organizations prior to going on to join the Oregon National Guard. His combat deployments include Operation Just Cause, Operation Enduring Freedom, and Operation Iraqi Freedom. The general is very distinguished, not only in his military service, but also academically. As I mentioned, he's a West Point grad. In addition to that, he was at the Naval Postgraduate School in Monterey. He knew how to choose his locations. He was at the United States Naval War College in Newport, Rhode Island, and he was at Harvard in the Senior Service College. General Daniel Hawkins, could he come up, please?
Ricky, just another very high-class event. As you look across the room, I'm just very fortunate to be here. I got a chance to do this in Colorado Springs last year. And Vandy, you and Tony hit all my notes, so I'm good. But as I sat there, I started thinking about, you look across the room and these incredible folks here, and they're just representative of what's out in the field. And, I spent most of my time in aviation and infantry in the Army, and then I kind of became part of the ballistic missile defense architecture of my last two of my last three jobs. And I actually got to see where Carolyn was stationed out at Fort Greely. I got to learn a lot about the whole architecture and how it's set up, and I got to meet some of the great soldiers, airmen, sailors, and Marines that are out there doing this every single day. But I had the very unique opportunity to be that person on the end of the phone line when we had to make some of these decisions. And the greatest thing about that, because you practice this, and you go through this scenario, and you're like, this is what I'll do, this is what I'll do. But when that phone rings, and it's for real, you think back to every single one of those individuals and what they're doing across the world and across the entire architecture. And having had that chance to meet them, it gave me the utmost confidence that if we had to make that decision, that I knew when myself or my superiors made that decision, that they were going to do everything they could to make that happen, to protect not only our country, but our allies and our forces, wherever they are around the world. So it's very personal for me because I did get those phone calls. And just knowing that was really helpful for me. And so, as I mentioned, I got to go to Fort Greely. And I get to recognize Carolyn Dominic today. And I will tell you, it's interesting. She left Puerto Rico for Alaska. And she's still there. So that alone is very impressive. But to talk about Carolyn a little bit, she's a fourth-generation Puerto Rico National Guard soldier, one of approximately 300 soldiers in the 100th Missile Brigade, which is ground-based mid-course defense. She really is the epitome of a National Guard soldier. She started out as a human intelligence collector, and then as time changed, survivor force structure changed, she moved on to be a military policeman, and now she's an expert in missile defense. And the reason behind not only what she does every single day, but when they did their last operational readiness evaluation, she's certified as both a weapons operator and a command launch equipment operator. And her team did so well, they were recognized as the top crew by the evaluators after their certification. But it doesn't really stop there. So Carolyn she's very proficient, obviously, at what she does. She's great at it. But she also spends a lot of time up at Fort Greely taking care of all the other single soldiers there. She works very closely with the community to set up what they call their BOSS program, which is the Better Opportunities for Single Soldiers. She's a president for that. She's also on the Color Guard, and they've done over 60 events in the local community, providing a color guard for a lot of the events that occur there. And just recognized by her chain of command as just a total player and someone that's not just really good at what they do, but she's taking care of all those others out there. And I'll tell you, if you've been to Fort Greely, you really need some help out there. But Carolyn, please, if you could come on up, I'd like to recognize you for all your great efforts.
Thank you for that introduction. That's a tough act to follow. And your speech, sir, very tough to follow. Mine is really short and a little bit more personal. But yes, first of all, I've never been in a room with so much brass before. So many stars, I feel like I'm in the cosmos. It is really good. It's really strange, but it's really good feeling. Thank you, Ricky Ellison. It's maybe the second time I've seen you. General Bowen, thank you for being here. I've seen you a couple of times too. First of all, I would like to thank you all for having me here. Never in a million years did I imagine that I will be here tonight. I am deeply humbled by this opportunity. I would like to thank the love of my life, who couldn't be here tonight, as it was very difficult for me to fly up here. But I'm here, thank God. I would also like to thank my family, especially my father, who served 33 years, both in the Air Force and in the Army. And also my Army family. Without them, I wouldn't have been able to achieve most of the things I have done in my career. I hope that this will help inspire soldiers to go that extra mile, to get out of their comfort zones and give back to their communities. Some soldiers believe that they need to be high-ranking individuals to make a difference. They forget that even the lowest-ranking individual can make that difference, and that positive impact can help motivate others, even the leaders that we look up and admire. So thank you all.
Whatever you want.
Take a look down. Take a look back up. Go deep. 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 Go deep.
We move now from the National Guard to the Navy. I would remind the audience that we are completely nonpartisan here. Navy, before I introduce Vice Admiral Dixon Smith, I go back to 1984, and that time, if you recall, President Reagan ordered a strike of the Libyan coast on Muammar Gaddafi, who was still very much alive and in power. The communication systems for that strike came from a company I ran. Just before the strike was to take place, the system malfunctioned. So I got a call and indicated the system had malfunctioned, and I was summoned to Washington, which I came post haste. And they said, well, you know, we're going to get it fixed. I said, of course we're going to get it fixed. Got the right people in there and so on and so forth. And the Navy, I'm here to tell you, gently indicated to me that I wasn't going anywhere until the system was fixed. We got it fixed post haste. And in fact, that strike, if you recall, was successful. Vice Admiral Dixon Smith is commander of the Navy Installations Command. After receiving his commission from Annapolis in 1983, Vice Admiral Smith's first sea tour was aboard the USS Miller, then the USS Jarrett, participating in Operation Desert Storm, then the USS Gridley, participating in the establishment of Operation Southern Watch over southern Iraq, and then he was XO aboard the USS Antietam. He has commanded USS the Sullivans, the naval base in San Diego, the Navy region in Hawaii, the Navy service group in the mid-Pacific, the Navy region southwest, and the Navy region mid-Atlantic. Vice Admiral Smith holds a master's degree in business from Webster University, and is a graduate of the Army Command and General Staff College, General Staff College at Fort Leavenworth, Kansas. Vice Admiral Smith, would you come up, please?
It was the best year of our lives. 3rd Infantry Way, every Friday night in January, barbecuing. So, Hateem, thanks much for the kind introduction, and Ricky and Heather, thank you as always, and thank you for all you do for all our military service members. I had the pleasure of meeting Ricky when I was out at MidPAC and with PMRF, and we've forged a great relationship since then, even though the Chargers are going north, but it is what it is. You mentioned the Jarrett, and you also mentioned, you know, challenges in '84. If I take you back to 1991, when I was ops boss on Jarrett, and Desert Storm, along with Gloucester, was providing air cover for the USS Missouri right off of Kuwait while she was doing gunfire support. And we had a silkworm fired at the Missouri, the three of us, and Gloucester ended up shooting it down. But in the ensuing furball, if you will, Missouri launched chaff. We had our close-in weapon system on AEW auto go off. SEWIS didn't go after the silkworm. SEWIS went after the chaff cloud from Missouri, and we shot Missouri. All right, and we put SEWIS rounds in one of her heads and burned a guy in the back of the neck with some slag. I say that because we didn't quite get it right. And you jump forward 25 years to 3 months ago in the Red Sea in the USS Mason, and birds away, birds affirm, on three inbound missiles, splash them, grand slam, you can't do any better. And they just got home last week. The reason they were able to do that was because of guys and gals like FC1 fire controlman first class Nate Lynch. He's an Aegis tech on the USS John Paul Jones, JPJ, out in Mid-Pac. And he spends his time along with his girlfriend. All right, Char is here with him, a cryptological technician, first class on the ship. And they go out and they practice and they test and they get it right for us. And they do that every day. As a matter of fact, they can't enjoy the full weekend here because he's got to fly back on Sunday because they got on a mission next Friday. I don't know what he's doing here. He should be back there studying and setting that system up. All right, but he sets up that Aegis system to consummate those engagements. In the 18 months that he's been on board, he's led and run four missions in setting up that Aegis system. In that 18 months, he has fired over 25 missiles. All right, there's not a lot of folks that get to fire 25 live missiles over 18 months. All right, this guy knows what he's doing. All right, and it's because of guys like him and those missiles. And it doesn't matter whether it's the missiles in the Red Sea, all right, the ICBMs that North Korea is thinking about firing here soon, all right, or the CF-21 that China's got, it's our carrier killer, whatever you want, all right, we have the confidence to go out and defeat those threats because of guys like that. What makes these kind of evenings so wonderful, it's not you guys. It's being able to spend the night talking to guys like him and gals like Char. He didn't join the Navy for several years. So he's a little bit of a senior guy. He went to college, wants to be a teacher, and then decided to join the Navy. You know what? He still wants to be a teacher, and we had a chat tonight. He's already a teacher because he's already doing lots of mentoring. Lots of mentoring and teaching people he doesn't even know. And it's been a privilege to be here tonight to get to know he and his girlfriend a little bit better and realize just not how awesome the Navy is and the good hands that our Navy's in, but all of our services and, more importantly, our United States. So I have the privilege and the honor of introducing to you Fire Controlman First Class Nate Lynch. Come on up here, buddy. For you, hey, it's even got your name on it.
Full name.
Look at that, full name. Nathaniel, not Nathan. Right. Nathaniel.
No,
all right.
I like Nate.
Is that there? You like Nate? All right. Okay, get the camera, because you're gonna text us right back now.
Hold on. Give her a sec. Give her a sec.
I know. I'm not putting it on yet.
Thank you.
I know. It's going to take a while to get that. This is going to go back in the next 5 minutes. Yeah. All right, let's step over here so she can get it, right?
Awesome.
so I'm extremely nervous.
You'll be fine.
All right, so first off, I want to say I'm probably the least ranked person in here. So I'm thankful for everyone that is in attendance, for being here, for not only myself, but the other three awardees. I'll try to control my emotions as well. All right, so first off, I'd like to say thank you to Ricky Elson and the entire MDA team, or MDAA team. This is an amazing honor, so thank you. Thank you to Admiral Smith and Admiral Ward for being in attendance tonight. Your speech was amazing. I feel like this is probably goes number one on my list in terms of being enlisted. So, thank you. I also want to say thank you to USS Jean Paul Jones. Obviously, without the support of the crew, I wouldn't be here tonight. So thank you to USS Jean Paul Jones. Thank you to Captain Rossetti, Captain Hall, Commander Mink, and Lieutenant Marshall, who's the acting combat systems officer. Next, I'd like to say thank you to CF Division, who's the division that I'm in charge of. Without their support, without their knowledge, without their tutelage in even teaching me about things I don't know about and maybe think that I know about, I wouldn't be as successful as I am. So thank you to CF Division. Hopefully we'll get a video of this and that can get back to them. Next, I'd like to thank Char for being here. All right. So I didn't know what to expect coming here 2 days ago or two nights ago. So I want to say thank you to Ricky for his words of inspiration in terms of growth. You know, we had a conversation this morning. I think, you know, in terms of, you know, what you said in terms of growth and in terms of being around people that are better than you and being around people that can inspire you and can invoke competition within you. And I think that's what this is tonight, right? That's what this is to me. This inspires me to be exponentially better than I am tonight. So I thank you for that. To Admiral Smith, your words in terms of not failing and wanting to succeed and needing to succeed, I think those words are inspirational tonight as well. Because I feel the same way, right? Whether, you know, going to USS Jean Paul Jones, I went there a year and a half ago, 18 months ago, as you said, and that was my first experience with ballistic missile defense. But my will and my drive not to fail is what has me here tonight. So I thank you for those words. Final words I'd like to say, I'd like to just say everyone here inspires me to be more than I am tonight. And you know, me receiving this award and taking it back to USS Jean Paul Jones is gonna inspire everyone within the crew. You know, whether you guys see it or whether you guys know it or not, it's gonna inspire everyone to be better than they are. So thank you.
The last presenter I have the honor of introducing is traveling incognito. I met this gentleman last year at a similar event in Ramstein Air Force Base in Germany. And Scout's honor, I didn't recognize him. Because at that time he was in full military regalia, and today he's just in a civilian suit. But whether he's in his military uniform or whether he's in his civilian suit, Lieutenant General Ben Hodges is Lieutenant General Ben Hodges. He's the commanding general for our army, the United States Army in Europe. He graduated from West Point in May of 1980. After his first assignment as an infantry lieutenant in Germany, he has commanded infantry units at the company, battalion, and brigade levels at the 101st Airborne Division and in Operation Iraqi Freedom. His most recent operational assignment was as Director of Operations, Regional Command South in Kandahar, Afghanistan. His last assignment, prior to taking over as Commanding General, was Commander, NATO Allied Land Command from 2012 to 2014. General Hodges, would be kind enough to come up, please.
So I do have a great privilege of introducing tonight CW2 Kevin Crothers as the Army's Missile Defender of the Year. And what I'd like to do is take advantage of this opportunity that Rick has given me to put him in context, why this matters and why I'm here. Now, I'm not incognito, because that would imply I was trying to sneak in here. Actually, I'm coming off 2 weeks of goofing off in Georgia and Florida on leave, and frankly, I didn't want to carry a uniform for one night. So, one of the advantages of being as old as somebody that graduated in 1980. So I told Ricky, I said, well, of course I want to participate in this. I'm here in town, but I'm in my Air Force uniform here. And, all right.
Be very careful.
That was a cheap shot. But it was such an easy one that I couldn't pass it up. But Ricky let me come anyway, so thanks. And look, before I take jabs at anybody else, I'm going to tell you, there's nobody that loves air power more than an infantryman. And there's nobody that loves the world's greatest Navy than an infantryman. You guys have all been watching 3rd Brigade of 4th Division from Fort Carson, Colorado, arriving in Poland.
Yeah,
I mean, it's freaking awesome. Well, they didn't drive there. Right. They came on ships, because the United States Navy makes sure they can get there. So
yeah.
I love our Air Force. I love our Navy. So I want to make sure I'm clear on that, but I'm going to take shots at you guys all night long here. One of the great things about being here tonight also is I get to see some great friends, Dick Formica, Bob Lennox, Dave Halverson, and Bob McCaleb. These are great men. I mean, they have worked their entire life for our country. They're smart. They have lots of other options. They chose to serve as Army officers, and so getting to see you guys here tonight. Bob, you're an Army aviator. I don't know what you're doing at an air defense event, but nonetheless, all of you guys that are here that have contributed so much is great seeing y'all. Ricky, you and Heather, of course, you're the embodiment. You don't have to wear a uniform to serve your country, and that's what both of you have done for so long. I mean, you don't have to do this. And you could be doing so much stuff, making so much more money, doing other things, but yet you invest so much time to help identify and recognize great young men and women who are making a difference. So thank you. Thank you for that. What was interesting to me is I looked at our recipients tonight, and Chavez, I'm also from the Redneck Riviera. I'm from Quincy, Florida. So I love seeing somebody from the panhandle there. But three of the four people tonight that are being recognized all joined the military after 9/11. I mean, they joined the Navy, they joined the Army, they joined the Guard after our country went to war. And clearly, you've heard them speak, you've heard two of them already speak tonight. They had other choices. I mean, they could have done a million other things. And they chose to join the military while their country was at war. I'm very proud of them. It's impressive, and I'm thank God people like that continue to do it. And I also got to see tonight a dear old friend of mine, Admiral Dan Holloway. We were in the same capstone class, and honestly, before I went to capstone, it took the Congress, by the way. People complain about the Congress. We don't get a penny unless the Congress does their job. And also, it took the Congress to force us to play together, because none of the services were going to ever do anything with each other unless until the Congress passed a law that made us do that. And so one of the parts of the Goldwater Nichols was the creation of a course called Capstone. So all new flag officers had to learn how to get along with each other. So we had, you know, Jarhead, a couple of squids, you know, an Air Force guy, and some brilliant Army generals. In this class. And 6 weeks together. And it's phenomenal. Honestly, it's one of the best courses I've attended in almost 37 years. I hate to say it, 37 years. And Admiral Holloway was in our class. And I'm going to tell you the truth. He's one of the finest people I've ever met in my life. He was the peer, you know, being a peer leader is one of the most difficult things there is. If you've got rank, you can direct people to do stuff. He was the peer. I mean, everybody, it just automatically gravitated to Admiral Holloway. The other key to success, though, when you go to Capstone, make sure that there's a guy who's getting selected for promotion to the next rank in your class. He was a senior guy in our class and had to pay for a big wet down while we were in. It was probably one of the nicest parties I've ever been to, on top of a hotel in Guatemala City. And fortunately, all of us are so old, nobody had an iPhone, and there was no evidence that that party ever took place. So, Dan, really great to see you here. I'm very proud of you. There's a couple other people that are here, three people specifically, that I have served with from the 10th Army Air and Missile Defense Command. Colonel Greg Brady, Colonel Jen Eichhoff, right there, and Command Sergeant Major Steve Burnley, one of the finest non-commissioned officers I've met in 37 years. These are the three people... these are the three people that woke me up about air and missile defense. I mean, I'm an infantry guy, and honestly, if you go to NTC or the Joint Readiness Training Center, or you're doing a home station training at Fort Campbell or wherever, like air defense, whatever, you know, I mean, because first of all, world's greatest air forces made sure we never had to give a damn about it. I mean, we didn't. So I went the first 35 years of my Army life, I didn't give a hoot. Air defense, I remember General Abrams, I was in Korea, he said, hey, take that air defense battalion, the North Koreans won't be able to fly after 24 hours, we're going to use them for traffic control because they're loaded with talented NCOs and they got tons of radios. and that's not a joke. So our air defense battalion in the 2nd Infantry Division was going to make sure we had good traffic control on the peninsula, because we didn't have to worry about anything flying through the sky. Well, obviously that's all changed. There's no amount of traffic control in Korea that would ever work anyway, so I can just dish that. But now, when you look at what Russia, the capabilities that Russia has demonstrated and the will to use capabilities, thousands of unmanned aerial vehicles that they have employed in Crimea and in the Donbass region. We've learned so much from watching the Ukrainians fighting against Russians. And if you don't think there's Russians there, you really have been living in a cave for the last couple of years. It's incredible. It's eye-watering. And then, of course, what the Chinese have demonstrated, what the North Koreans, you know, talk about. Now, kind of like when all of a sudden you realize and you're in Saudi Arabia or Kuwait, and Saddam has chemical weapons, all of a sudden everybody says, shit, that mask really is important. Now all of a sudden,
air and missile defense, all of a sudden people are caring about it. So people like Greg Brady back there and Jen Eichhoff and Steve Burnley, all of a sudden everybody wants to know, where's Burnley at? And I want to know what he's doing because I need him, and it matters. And so I'm proud. I want to make sure everybody knew those three people. They woke me up. They got U.S. Army Europe fired up, and we are all in because of two colonels and a great command sergeant major. Now, obviously, we're not out there by ourselves. In fact, the senior air and missile defender is great 3rd Air Force for us in Europe. General Clark was T-Ray. It's now General Clark took over. And my colonel, filling the position of a general, you know, is the deputy to him when we do integrated air and missile defense. We've got one Patriot battalion, one, for all of Europe and Israel, by the way. So part of what we've been doing in Europe, which is what everybody in this room does routinely, you take what you got, and the American people don't want to hear, well, I'm sorry you didn't have the resources. You still have to accomplish the mission. I mean, that's been our tradition for since 1775. I mean, I'm pretty sure George Washington was not a T1 or P1 or, he still had to do what he had to do. And that's what's expected of all of our men and women in all of our services. So you end up depending on really, really talented young people to figure it out. Because at the end of the day, it ain't going to matter. Did you have enough time to practice doing what you're supposed to do? Did you have all the right number of NCOs where you were? Did you have enough battalions? I mean, right now, the only thing I've got that can shoot down a Russian UAV is either one of her zillion-dollar Patriot missiles or my 9mm pistol. There's nothing in between. We have zip. So, Glenn, obviously seeing you here, how much we depend on the National Guard to get Avengers over in Europe, so that we can help knock down those Russian UAVs if we ever had to. But still, at the end of the day, as it's been since 1775, the U.S. Army turns to very, very young people to solve all our problems. And that's what Kevin Crothers is all about. Joined the Army in 2004 from Antioch, Illinois. And as I went through his bio, I realize what a loser I am. He's got, I suspect if you went to his house, you would find 8 or 9 honor grad certificates from everything from advanced individual training up through the last course he went to. I mean, the guy is a winner. He is a winner. He just performs, exceeds the standard, and thankfully the Army has seen fit to continue to promote him, to retain him, and challenge him enough so that he thought, you know, I got other things I could be doing that would give me a lot more money, but I like the people I'm with, I like the purpose for serving, and so a guy like Kevin Crothers sticks with the Army, continues to serve, and what an incredible example you are, a role model you are. And there's young privates out there saying, I want to be like him. Now, that's what you mean to us. So I want to introduce you, CW2, Kevin Crothers. Don't fall overboard. This will take you straight to the bottom. That weighs like 20 pounds. All right. By the way, at this course I'm in, the reason I'm wearing this uniform is I'm in the transition course. I am an old son of a gun, and the Army's saying, hey, you know, there's like 1,000 younger people behind you. Get out of the way. And so I am going to transition out of the Army here in August. And part of the course that I go through, they teach you how to do a resume in civilian language and, you know, not your Army stuff and, you know, also how to dress. I didn't realize this till 2 days ago, how what a terrible dresser I mean, your sleeves should not exceed. Dan, you were supposed to tell me that, man. You look like a Guatemalan dictator right now with this thing. Excellent. And you know, in the Army, we love our tradition, our coin. This has been the symbol of U.S. Army Europe since 1942. And on the back, it says U.S. Army Europe, Wiesbaden, Germany, presented by the commanding general for excellence. You know the tradition. Next time I see you, if you don't have it, you're buying me a big beer.
All right, good evening, everyone. I'm honored to have the privilege to be introduced tonight by one of the other CEOs in the room. But seriously, General Hodges, thank you for being a caring and engaged leader in Europe and for what you've done and continue to do for Army air and missile defense in Europe. I'm very humbled tonight to be in the presence of not only the other awardees, but everyone in this room. Caroline, Chavez, Nate, your achievements and what you do and what it represents for your components in our military is just very humbling. And in the Army, we can't do it without you guys. So big round of applause again for all the other awardees. Tonight for me and the hours leading up to tonight was really an opportunity to stop and reflect on the Army ADA heritage and what it means to us today. Many of you may know the name Brigadier General James Shipton. His name is on the award for our individual air defender from the ADA branch this year, which I happen to have the honor to receive. And he did a lot of interesting things. I could talk for 10, 15 minutes like Chavez did about just James Shipton. You said 1 minute, sir. You said 1 minute. You said 1 minute, so I'm going all night long, all right? But really, in the interwar period of the 20s and 30s, what General Shipton and his contemporaries had to face was really kind of the dying out of the anti-aircraft artillery regiments and how they could get to the next thing on the horizon. They focused on four leadership principles: research and development, the fostering of intellectual freedom, training and soldier care. And it not only got them through that point and set them up for success for the following World War, but it really built the foundation of the Army Air Defense Artillery. And so I was trying to think of, you know, how these four principles have still carried through to today. And research and development, I mean, that's always going to happen. I mean, we obviously went from Shipton's 90 millimeter guns to the SM-3 Block II, which Nate's going to go test here next month. It's incredible, and that's never going to stop, right? But the other things they focused on, the intellectual freedom, the training, the soldier care, that focuses on people. And all the money, all the research and development in the world, the greatest weapons, they're never going to suffice without people. We're always going to face challenges like they did in the 20s and 30s, with resources and things like that, and the adversary, where we need our people to win wars. And so I think that's our ultimate weapon as missile defenders. Our most powerful system of systems is just our people. And so and as missile defenders, it really knows no boundaries. I mean, from the strategic level of war all the way down to the tactical, across all the services like we've seen, across nations, across the entire globe, and every single individual in that network is key. And so tonight I stand here and accept this award on behalf of all the Army personnel that are in that network. It's not just me. Nothing I have to offer goes anywhere if it's not for that human network that we have. And so with that being said, I'd like to thank each and every one of them that aren't able to be here tonight to talk to you guys. And to say thanks, so I say thank you for them. And I'd also like to thank our leadership of the Air Defense Artillery Branch, from our Commandant, Brigadier General McIntyre, and his office, to my own command team, Colonel Eichhoff and Sergeant Major Burnley, just for being caring, engaged leaders and being good stewards of our branch, both past, present, and future. Lieutenant General Hodges, again, thank you. It was a great honor that you were here. It's actually a surprise to me. I didn't know that was going to be the case, so it was really great to see you again. And the MDAA, Mr. Ellison, and your entire organization, just thank you for telling our story. Thank you for conveying to the American people what it is that we do. Because if we do our jobs, no one really knows what we're doing, right? It's retired General Halverson made the comment earlier about how it's an insurance policy, and most people don't think about their insurance until they have to use it. So thanks for spreading the word about what we do. CW5, David Jones at 10th. Many of you in the Army Air Defense know him. He's my first line supervisor. He's been challenging me for the last 9 months, making me execute at game speed, as some of you may know, he likes to say. But he's really expounded my talent by putting me outside my comfort zone every day. And he's also a very caring leader, and he shows it every day. And our current Chief Warrant Officer of the branch, CW5 Chris Wehmeyer, and his predecessor, CW5 Nate Jones, as well as all the other warrant officers across the 88 branch, for inspiring me, mentoring me, and for their tireless dedication to ensuring that the 88 warrant officers remain competent, professional, and relevant into the future. And last but not least, I'd like to thank my family, most importantly, my parents, for their love and support. I just got to spend some time with them in Florida over the last few weeks. And for instilling in me the values that really made military service second nature to me. You can call them the seven Army values or whatever, but for me, I looked at it and thought, well, that's just how I was raised. And I'm really grateful for my parents for instilling that in me. And my wife, Nicole, and my soon-to-be one-year-old son, Adam, they're home in Germany right now. Tried to get them out here, but it was just really best that they took a knee and stayed at home after all the travel we've been doing recently. So they kind of give me the perspective of balance, that as much as I love my job, you know, there's more to life, and that's obviously family, and it's a beautiful thing. So thanks again for this opportunity. It was a really wonderful evening, and I hope to see you all again in the future.
Thank you for that. As we come to the close of the evening, just a couple of observations I would like to make that are completely heartfelt and totally unscripted. The first one is General Hodges shared with us that he's transitioning to civilian life in August, learning how to wear a coat and tie and a few other things. General Hodges, if I was in your place, I wouldn't worry too much about a transition, because I would submit to you that whatever it is you choose to do, you could always be a stand-up comic. And I think you'd be a fine stand-up comic. As we look around the room, and I know why I do this, I always come in with trepidation, because you want to do what is right. You don't want to waste people's time, and you want the evening to be meaningful. So as I think about that, I think about the people in the room. I think about the awardees and each of the presenters has been complete and gracious in their remarks, but they certainly need to be mentioned again in terms of what they have accomplished and what they will accomplish. You go past the awardees to all of the other servicemen and women in the room, and irrespective of their rank, we all know they didn't get to do what they do. They didn't get to the rank that they have achieved without huge sacrifice. huge sacrifice at the personal level, huge sacrifice at the familial level. But here they are. And then you have in the room our friends from the corporate defense community. And we all know that from a missile defense standpoint, or not just missile defense, but for many of the other technologies that we are fortunate enough to employ as opposed to our adversaries, it is as a result of the relationships with the Lockheeds and the Raytheons and the Boeings of this world. And they're all here. So I personally am humbled. And I personally am extremely grateful to have the opportunity to be your MC this evening. My last task for the evening is to introduce a good friend and a colleague, Ricky Ellison. General Vandenham asked me as we were having dinner as to how I met Ricky. And he asked if I knew Ricky for professional football or whatever. And I told him I know Ricky because I knew his wife. And she's the one who introduced me to him.
His better half.
His better half, thank you. As you know, he has a passion for the deployment, development, and evolution of missile defense. That much is well known. But there are two other elements that are not as well known. He is also heavily involved with supporting wounded warriors of the United States military and those with traumatic brain injury. In 2011, Ricky brought the National Football League, the NFL, and the United States Army together on traumatic brain injuries that resulted in a partnership announced in 2012 by the Commissioner of the NFL and the Chief of the United States Army. Additionally, in 2005, Ricky founded the Youth Impact Program for disadvantaged and at-risk adolescent boys in our nation's inner cities. As a consequence of that initiative, there have been 23 youth impact programs in 12 of our nation's major cities and major universities. Ladies and gentlemen, I would like to thank you for your time and turn the floor over for closing remarks to Ricky Ellison.
Thank you. Hatim, like me, is an immigrant. Now, he came to this country in 1968, I think with $7 in his pocket. And he's one of the Americans that have made America great. His six companies, I think three of them, sold for over $1 billion. He has contributed to this country tremendously. And it's with great respect I have for you and everybody has for you. Thank you very much, Hatim. Thank you. So this evening is about winning. And I equate leadership with winning. Leaders are winners. And we had the opportunity with our four winners to go to, I think, one of the greatest winners of all time, to George Washington's Mount Vernon and the gravesite. And it's interesting that the three winners, Caroline wasn't there yet, but were able to put a wreath on that tomb that he lies in. and what he represented in terms of beating the British Empire, of creating a nation, creating a constitution. It was not an individual merit. It is his ability to enable thousands and thousands of people and ideas to come together to win. And he is the greatest winner of our country. So we have four phenomenal winners. And we have four phenomenal winners that really represent this era of presidency. We're going to transition to a new era. And over the past 8 years under President Obama, each four of these guys represent the apex of what this president and this administration and you that serve this administration have achieved. So, Tony has done and put forward the exercises for the European phase adaptive approach, phase two. That was President Obama's signature missile defense deployment to defend all of Europe from the threat from Iran. It has been completed, and we have one of the leaders that enabled hundreds of, to be able to put that plan and make that happen. We have Nate, who is in our most modern Baseline 9 ship. The Baseline 9 evolved over the last 8 years, and he is going to launch our biggest partnership with a foreign ally, about a $3 billion missile that we shared the cost with Japan, and they're going to demonstrate that next week, showing that capability that exponentially grew during President Obama's administration. We go to Kevin, who's put in force the defense plans to be able to deal with the threat that nobody really wants to understand or wants to confront, the Russian threat in Europe, and bringing that to the fortitude to where we're at. And we have young Caroline, who is a fire control officer on the GBI missiles that are protecting our country today from a North Korea launch. That is the epitome of our best of the best of missile defense. And I also want to say, because you are presented by the best of the best, and I'll start with Dan, who ran NORTHCOM, the deputy commander of NORTHCOM, that oversaw with all his command that mission that grew to where we are today from 8 years ago. And with Ben Hodges, who is leading the charge to our chief of the military on the need for air missile defense. That whole charge has been led by him. And Dixon, who put forward the Aegis Ashore sites in Romania, building in Poland, and the one in and the one in Hawaii. And then we have Scott, who did all the AOCs that are all over the world, that all the missile defense capabilities are all go through those AOCs in Air Force Command. So you've done something great. You've passed the ball. You've gone from the 40 to the 40. You're going to give the ball to the next president, the next culture, the next head coach, and it's got to be exciting, because we all can win Super Bowls right now because we haven't played yet, and we all have to believe that we're going to be better than we were. We have to believe that. And we have to rise above, and we have to break. We have to accelerate. We have to move away from a technology that was limited for rogue nations to go into the near-peer complex threat. We need a break. And you are the foundation. You're the leadership to lead that across the board. And we're going, and we should be excited about it. And it's a competitive cauldron within ourselves. And we're very excited, very honored to recognize that leadership and what you represent. So I wanted to, on behalf of all alliance that are here tonight, thank you very much for your leadership. I want to thank our staff for putting on an excellent event, and I want to thank the beautiful ladies in the room for their partnership, especially my wife, Heather. So thank you, and good night.
Rose Bowl analogy here somewhere, doesn't there?
Well, I think we haven't talked about a little big elephant in the room, the Army-Navy game. I don't know why I ask you, quiet.
We'll just let the air talk for another 14 years.
On track.
Is the bar open?
The bar's open. The bar's open. We want to make sure we get the award winners and the presenters up here for the photo.
Yes. Yeah. Award winners, and then the bar is open. The bar is open in the Bob May room.
I'm going to say a lot of things. I'm going to say a lot of things.